It is Saturday, June 30th, 2012. We're broadcasting live from Santa Cruz in the central coast of California. This is KSP Public Radio, and I welcome you to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Trock. So please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KSP. Today on the program, we're going to be doing some geek news with a wonderful cohort of geeks we have today. We have Mr. Ben Jaffe, and Mr. Ben Jaffe is a web developer, instructor, and world traveler. Hi.
Hi, we're a cohort of geeks.
I'll go with that.
Nice.
Lindsay and Ben, can you guys hear me?
I can hear you.
I can hear you fine.
Miles, you've got a problem, man.
I have busted.
So we also have Miles Elam, who's got a problem right now. Miles Elam is a software engineer and political junkie. Hi, Miles.
Hi, I'm a geek and my headphones don't work.
And I love how you keep looking at me and I'm like, well, they have headphones. We can figure this out probably while we're going to the show. I've got some 1/4-inch TRS.
Adapter, whatever.
Or you know what? I don't think we're taking calls today. So
1/8-inch?
I call them 1/8-inch. I know
they're 3.5 millimeters. They're not even close to an 1/8 of an inch.
Yes, but the 1/4-inch are 1/4-inch, right?
The 1/4-inch are 1/4-inch, which is about 6.3 millimeters.
We're talking about the headphone jack you normally, and you know what? We've divulged into geek hell.
The iPod. Let's just call it the iPod plug, right?
No, that's a TRRS. No. All right, let's go on with Lindsay Lonnie, systems analyst, and now a software engineer. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi.
Last time you were here, you were not a software engineer, officially.
Not officially, I was not.
So your job titles have changed?
Yes,
at unknown companies.
Now, instead of sitting under fluorescent lights, I sit in the dark.
So the programming space is all dark?
Yeah.
That's great.
It's like a cave.
Yeah. I hope you have some kind of light besides your monitor.
I'm working on that.
Yeah, get a desk lamp or something. It's always better for you. So some incandescent, non-flickering thing. Hey, what are you coding with?
Right now, we're using Smarty templates. I'm just doing basic stuff with VI.
So you just joined that group.
Yeah, exactly.
Smarty, what's Smarty?
It's a templating engine for creating websites, web pages, and so it's just like PHP,
for PHP and
JavaScript.
So, yeah, I'm sorry. I just have to jump in and go, okay, PHP, why was it created? Because people at the time were making Perl CGI.
Right.
And most of the time you had a whole bunch of HTML and just a little bit of script. So PHP was a templating engine, ostensibly for Perl. And now
it has
there's
templating
a
engines.
Templating engine for the templating engine for
now,
Perl.
I thought that...
People ask why I don't like PHP.
I thought that PHP came around because ASP was doing so successfully for Microsoft. Nothing? It came around the same time. It has the same syntax.
Which was also
JSP came like 3 years later.
Guys, I'm too young for this. There's too many acronyms.
too young for acronyms?
I'm getting bored.
Well, Lindsay, let's start with you on the news.
All right. So a few months ago, one of the drones, the military drones, they think was hijacked by some Iranian hackers and crash-landed. And so the military went to some Texas University students and said, hey, can you hack this plane? Can you redirect it? We want to figure out how to fix this. And sure enough, they were able to do it with about $1,000, some advanced GPS equipment. They were able to intercept the GPS signal and redirect the plane, essentially the drone.
Brought to you by Michael Bay.
Who's Michael Bay? Seriously, I don't know the reference.
The director?
Ah, gotcha.
Yeah, but that's about it. They're going to work on, I don't know how you fix something like that, but that's going to be the next step.
So when you say hack the plane and it crashed, it's not like it was taken over and commandeered and driven. It was given horrible coordinates via this hacking method, most likely. Of course, they don't actually know because they didn't recover the vehicle.
Well, so then like, again, if you get someone appropriately bad GPS coordinates, the plane will be...
Yeah, I mean, that's basically what they did, is blinded it, I would assume, overpowering the GPS signals.
Yeah, and it's a public, you know, I don't know how they would encrypt or, you know, hide something like that.
I mean, basically GPS, you have to get at least 3 satellites to know your location, and that time information has to be really good. So if you bombard it with other data, I'm sure you could overwhelm the signal.
Directional antennas, perhaps?
Yeah, right. And it wouldn't be pretty easy with directional antennas. So you could imagine just a smartphone app plugged into an antenna array thing and just, boom, take the plane down.
But you might need 3. Oh, you don't need 3 of them. You just need to hijack one of them to change the signal if you want to control the signal really well.
And I don't know if you need to do anything but let the plane not receive the real signals, right? You might just need to block the signals.
But then what? I would assume that it has some kind of altimeter inside or something to keep it from crash landing.
Right, so it
like
keeps
that, you know?
Flying straight.
Because, I mean, GPS might go down, you know?
Like right, but what I'm saying is a blind flying vehicle without GPS, you can't detect wind speed except relative to yourself. You have a lot of lack of knowledge. right?
So maybe they just disabled all of the GPS by bombarding it, and then they controlled the wind.
They just waited. And then they just waited.
And then they just waited. Yeah.
But I don't know. We have no idea how it's working. It's cool that the college kids did it. How big is the team?
They didn't say in the article that I was reading, but I don't think it was a huge team. It was led by one of the instructors.
Right. That's awesome. So, and just $1,000 of gear.
A lot of these software exploit. Basically, it's a software exploit.
Sure.
Well, it's a hardware exploit. But still. It doesn't take that many people. Right. It takes the brain power to figure out what the exploit might be.
And then it takes a little time to write it.
Right.
Test it. Yeah. And I would assume that one of the benefits they had, of course, is that they had the plane to play with, right? Like they could actually use it as a feature. So it's a lot faster probably for them to develop it with a test mechanism. It's hard to go in the field and go, well, let's hope I don't get killed and I'll try to take this thing down. Anyway, interesting that we're outsourcing to our youth military secrets.
I was wondering how they, you know, because obviously they don't want to crash this plane during testing. I'm wondering how they intercepted it, redirected it, and then returned it back to its regular channel, or if that was just, you know, something that they could just stop giving it poor coordinates and it would correct itself.
Right. Mm. It reminds me of a story that I was reading recently about a military handheld devices. It looks like it took some. So the article is great. It's a Wired article. We'll have this article posted from geekspeak.org. The subject line is wonderful. It took the Army 16 years and 2 wars to deploy this network. So basically, military since the early 90s has been trying to give computers to the armed forces that are on the ground. So each person has a computer. It gives location of information. You find out where the troops are. All these things. Basically, a smartphone. And so they are giving. The military is actually giving handheld devices, and of course they are Android devices, to Army servicemen. They can access aerial footage from these planes that hopefully don't get taken over, and also troop locations and friendly, you know, just in general friendly locations, all in the field. And it is a Android-modified version, right? So you're able to kind of, the military is able to take over an existing open source project and keep going with it to make it probably a little more hardened, we would hope.
Yeah.
Ben Jaffe, let's go to you. Next story.
Just one more thought on that. I'm curious, like, what would be the possible ways of avoiding having this exploit happen to you? You know, like, if you have a drone, how would you avoid getting fed bad GPS coordinates? Like, I don't know if there is a good way to do it, because GPS is GPS. You can't just go change some satellites.
I mean, one thing I'm assuming is that this was the advantage is that you can overwhelm the antenna system from the ground. Yeah. So you potentially could make directional antennas on the craft that would only aim away from the Earth. So then you'd have to have a flying vehicle to intercept, right? So you have so there's that kind of shielding. And then there's also I'm not getting data. This is the data that I knew last. How long can I survive without GPS data, right?
I see.
And if you build that into the system so that it's a little smarter,
what could possibly go wrong?
I don't need GPS. Kill building.
Right, exactly.
Looks like New York, but it can't be. Yeah.
So here's my news. The cool cats among us have, iPhones and iPads and everything. But the cooler people like me have Kindles. Kindles are awesome. And one of the things that makes them so awesome, of course, is the battery life. These things will last for a month, 2 months, 3 months, depending on how much you use them and how much you read.
Depending on the model.
Yeah, depending on the model and depending on how much you use it and the antennas and how often you flip the pages, because it only uses power when you change the screen, right?
So if you're a fast reader, yeah, you got a day,
right? maybe a couple, but
how many page changes is it?
It's up in the tens, or
can you read the million?
It's like in the tens or hundreds of thousands. It's in the hundreds of thousands, I think.
That's a lot of books.
It's a lot of books. Yeah,
or it's just J.R.R. Martin's
in the tens of thousands.
Series.
It's one Twilight book.
Oh just, no!
We'll just
I wouldn't even know how big
in Twilight
are.
Units or something. But anyway, one of the problems with these screens, though, is that although they use very little power, they take time to refresh. So when I press the page turn button on my Kindle, it takes maybe 0.3 or 0.4, 0.5 seconds to switch the entire screen. It does a little flash thing too, and it's kind of annoying if you were, say, trying to watch a video on this thing. but if you're just reading, it's no problem. Well, it turns out this company named Plastic Logic now has a low-power e-ink type of display, which is color, which we've had color for a while, but we haven't really seen them commercially deployed because you don't get a lot of contrast. The colors aren't very vibrant.
None of the Kindle versions are e-ink color. All the color Kindles are actually LCD or OLED.
I believe they're all monochrome, with the exception of the Kindle Fire, which is a tablet. It's not a Kindle device. It doesn't use an e-ink screen. Right. It may as well be an iPad.
Okay, so this new company.
Yeah, so this new company now has color e-ink displays, and they have a very fast frame rate, like 12 frames per second, which means that, that's actually exactly half of the frame rate you see in the movie theaters. So you can actually watch a movie on the things, and they don't have great contrast and everything like that, but 12 frames a second is pretty darn good.
Can I suggest that maybe the Kindle is not the right platform to watch movies, and it actually is a good e-reader?
Oh man, I always watch my YouTube videos.
Then again, as you do, at your 7 frames a second.
Yeah, at my 2 frames a second.
Okay. Well, I mean, the thing is that the e-reader is really for a book. I mean,
yes. That's
the design, is to emulate a page of paper. Now it can be color, which is awesome because papers can sometimes do that as well. But it is an interesting idea that you might be able to get a small video clip, or, you know, like instead of in a book, you might see a series of 10 images that actually relate time. So you can kind of see how a horse gallops, for example. You'd see that in
like
a printed book sometimes.
Like there's the famous animated GIF.
Right. You could do that in Kindle directly. So you'd have that kind of saving space on the page, if you will, to show multiple images, which would be nice. But then again, I don't really think a third of a second or half a second or even a full second to wait for a page change. Is that a long time?
It's not a long time when you're reading, like I said, but so you can also do web browsing on the Kindle, which is one of the things that makes it really great, is you have free wireless access pretty much throughout the world, with a couple countries being exceptions. So Amazon is partnered with all of these
telecoms. Now, see, web browsing, that can't be good because...
It's a horrible experience, but it works really, really well if you're just trying to get a stupid map open and you're lost in Europe. I mean, it's really useful. I went to a couch surfing event and I couldn't find anybody, and so I went online and I found out that the event was canceled, so instead I did some shopping or something.
Went to a bar and got sad.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Ben, for the Kindle
Call
update.
Call of Duty just doesn't work very well, though, on the Kindle. 4 frames per second just
doesn't.
It's on the edge of playable, but you just can't do it.
So I am excited to see where this goes.
Yeah. Thank you for the new technology update. Hi, Miles.
Hello.
It's been a while since I said your name. How's it going? What's up on the news?
Well, the National Geographic Channel was putting up some polls asking Americans about various beliefs. You've seen stuff like this before, like how many believe that UFOs exist and are aliens. It should be added on there. 1/3 of Americans believe that, or 36%. More than 1 in 10 are confident they have spotted a UFO, assumed to be an alien. When you say UFO, the definition of UFO is unidentified flying object, which means you don't know what it is, but everyone jumps on saying it's aliens, but you just said it was unidentified.
Right.
You're identifying it. Anyway, so 1 in 5, 20%, know someone who claims to have seen one. And so other little tidbits like that, including, and this is the point that I brought it up on GeekSpeak, was so with regard to national security, Americans were polled who thinks would be better to handle an alien invasion, Barack Obama or Mitt Romney.
Oh, no. Did they really go there?
Turns out nearly 2/3, 65% of Americans think Barack Obama will be better able to handle the alien invasion.
Excellent.
Is that because they...
I don't have to say with that.
Yeah. How much of that is impacted by media?
I don't know. I think that more people want to see Obama in a major motion picture talking about alien advances,
exactly.
Right? Because he's just charismatic and it would be cool.
Also, a nice little tidbit, if aliens attacked the planet, 21% would call on the Hulk to save us, whereas only 12% would call on Batman and 8% would call on Spider-Man.
Was that in the same
poll? Well, yeah, that makes sense. What? I think I'd go with Batman before Hulk. It depends on if it's Banner Hulk or Hulk.
Good point. Was that in the same poll, the Batman Hulk thing?
Yes.
Okay, that makes me feel a little bit better, because I was feeling a little frustrated that they actually had a poll asking about the two presidential candidates and UFOs, giving legitimacy to...
Did they give multiple choice?
This was given by the National Geographic Channel on and checking national survey on UFOs and alien existence. Like, that's the whole...
Okay, okay, Miles. Did they make multiple choice on superheroes? Were those the only three?
I actually don't know.
Was Aquaman in there? You know, yeah. I mean, I want to know
writing
how bad.
Candidates.
And like Superman, please, can we do that one? Because that would be the right one to use. The other question is,
maybe
it's
they
only
were just
three,
doing Marvel.
It might have been just Marvel. Yeah, there's still got to be a better Marvel.
They had an exclusive contract with Marvel for this poll.
What about Wonder Woman? Isn't she Marvel?
She's DC. What are you talking
about? She's
DC. She's totally DC.
Okay, I lose my geek cred. I'm going to have to edit the podcast now.
just to get it back.
Right, right. It's all the amazingly powerful superheroes are DC. Real quick, though, Miles, how many did they just say Mitt Romney versus Obama? And did Obama beat the Hulk?
Didn't I already say I don't know what the poll
okay,
said?
I'm assuming that it was just Mitt Romney and Obama. And I want to know the percentage of Obama better than the Hulk. That's the question. And I can't go to sleep tonight until I find that. So I'll go up to geekspeak.org and read the whole article. Thank you so much, Miles.
I'm so happy we had this conversation.
Lindsay, how's it going?
It's going. I want to know why people chose it. What's the fill-in there?
Yes.
Right.
So what I was going to talk about is this cool spray-on battery technology. So batteries have five different components, and normally those round batteries that you get have these in five layers wrapped up into a circle. And what this team has done is made it so that you can use a spray to do the anode, cathode, separating material, and the two current collectors, and put it onto various surfaces.
Very cool.
It's about 0.5 millimeters thick, so it's pretty thin. And what they did is, over the course of 9 bathroom tiles, like that size, they got 2.4 volts and powered some LEDs for about 6 hours. So
that's not working so hot right now.
Yeah. It's functional, but, you know, what are you going to use it for? Maybe cover an entire airplane.
Always
got to
be a hater, right?
Something
well, you
like
know,
that.
I don't know if I need a whole bunch of LEDs on my bathroom floor. It's the problem.
But still, who doesn't?
Half a millimeter thick is pretty thin.
Yeah, it is.
It's wide, really tall, but really thin.
The battery tech right now that we do, you talked about, there's five layers in there. There's the two current collectors on both sides, an anode, a cathode. There's something else?
A separating material.
The separating material is accounting those as well. So it's like three compounds with separating materials for insulation and such. All right. And so they basically make a long sheet, the length of, let's say, take a AA battery, take a sheet of like aluminum foil, right? Cut it the length or the width of the battery, and then a roll that would be long enough where when you roll it up, it makes the size of a battery. That's how they're made, and there's multiple layers. Mm-hmm. So you're saying now, and it used to be, I'm assuming that this stuff would come off this giant machine, it would be imposed in it, and they'd wrap it up. That's why batteries are all this kind of standard size. Mm-hmm. So now you could potentially change that by getting the back of a laptop case or something and spraying the system onto whatever structure it has.
Right.
Very cool.
Cell phone, something like that. The thing is that the separating material that they're using right now is kind of like a plexi. So it's a liquid, you spray it, and then it's solid.
Oh, cool.
So I don't imagine it like a magnet that you can pull off, you know, roll on.
No, right. But I can imagine that you could implement it into structures of components and devices, right? So the entire case of the cell phone could be a battery.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of making...
Yeah. Or like your car paint has one layer that's battery right. layer or something like that. But what they need is an oxygen-free and dry environment in order to do this.
Yeah.
And it's expensive to create the kinds of environments that you need or do this on any sort of large scale. So it's just conceptual at this time, not really business practical, but who knows, maybe military or something.
Right. And I think it's interesting to note that as geeks, we're all highly aware that battery technology is kind of the defining factor of what we can do, right? The reason why we all have cell phones is because we have really awesome batteries. The reason why we have amazing audio that you can put in your ears with little earbuds is because we have good batteries, but also good magnets. But it's all about
the materials. Because we have electronics that are sipping power on a scale that has
absolutely.
Never been seen before.
Absolutely. But, you know, that what we can do with a smartphone versus a day of battery life is all about the battery, right? The more complex, the more power the battery will have, the more phones can do.
Well, that's how it works. Unless the phone is doing something at half the power.
What I'm saying is that the reason why our phones don't do more is because of power consumption.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm.
right.
That,
that's the bottleneck.
The bottleneck.
If you had a lot
better.
More power, you could have a lot more phone.
Yeah.
Lithium air.
Yeah, baby.
The reason my phone is so thick is because I got an extra battery, so it would last one day.
You like, a lot on your phone.
Yeah, it was lasting 6-7 hours.
It's watching a lot of videos.
This is the Nexus One. This was like the God phone.
You haven't gotten a new phone yet?
No, of course not.
Yeah,
why?
How much
why
did you
should
pay
I?
For that again?
I don't know. Somewhere in the order of $400. or so.
You have an iPhone 4. You have nothing to say.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Your exactly. phone was more expensive than that.
No, it wasn't. Well, I mean, it is for AT&T's purposes.
You paid for it.
See, I paid for my phone outright, and I have a contract-free plan.
Right.
And
that makes me now, happy. Have you changed in the last couple of years, your plan?
I have seriously considered it, and I have not quite done it.
So it wasn't such a good deal for you, huh?
Yeah, that actually brings up a gripe. Oh. With AT&T, if you get a subsidized phone, like the iPhone, yeah. then you pay for the phone through the service. But if you buy, for example, an iPhone or some other smartphone outright, there's no deal with AT&T to get a
same price.
Cheaper monthly price. Like, so, yeah.
Yeah.
That's my gripe for today.
I've got an old phone, too, and I'm refusing to give it up. I had a conversation with a coworker, and I said, I'm going to hold on to this until I can have a tiny little device on my keychain and have the Google Glasses.
That's all you want, right?
Exactly.
What kind of phone do you have?
I have a Droid 2.
All right. So you're also able to web browse and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's still a smartphone with a keyboard, but that kind of leads into the Project Glass. I don't know if you want to talk about that, Ben.
Should I?
In just a moment. Is that your next news story?
Sure.
Awesome. Project Glass in just a moment with Ben. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. This is Geek Speak. In the air with me is Lindsay Lonnie, Miles Elam, and Ben Jaffe. Let's do some geek bits.
Rock, paper, scissors, also known as Rochambeau. It's a game that we have all played at some point or another. And if you haven't, go find out what it is and start playing it. Like, you need to catch up. Well, turns out someone's built a robot that will never lose to you.
That's wrong.
So as you're going through the Rochambeau, the 1, 2, 3, and then spitting out the rock, paper, or scissors, it only takes a single millisecond, 1 millisecond, for the robot to recognize what shape your hand is going into.
Oh, right.
And so it has nothing to do with, I mean, it's actually cheating. It's watching what you're doing before
and just
doing
operating
it.
Really fast.
But it's faster than you can see it happen, the faster than human beings can perceive it, and therefore they're basically just beating you 100% of the time.
Right. So what you're saying is as you go and to open your hand to be paper, as soon as you've released your hand at that point where it looks like the intention of the physics is that your hand will open, it changes to rock. Or, sorry, scissors.
Yeah.
No. Yes, scissors. Yes. Can I play the game?
And if you're curious to see, like, is this for real, we'll be posting a video up on the website about this.
And geekspeak.org, when we do, everything we do is up at the website. And the geek bits are specifically to trick you into going to our site, I think, right? Because we talk basically the geek bit is something you can't experience on the radio. And it's a radio show. The fools. So, anyway, that's where we put them. So, Miles, do you have, I mean, Ben, do you have something that's
I do.
For the website.
I want to talk about some technology or a scientific theory that we thought was true, which was not true. I want to talk about phlogiston, which is what we used to think the thing that made things burn was. So I just want to read a quick paragraph from Wikipedia because it's fantastic. I like to use this word in my everyday, you know, everything. Phlogisticated substances are those that contain phlogiston and are dephlogisticated when burned. In general, substances that are burned in air were said to be rich in phlogiston. The fact that combustion soon ceased in an enclosed space was taken as clear-cut evidence that air had the capacity to only absorb a definite amount of phlogiston. When air had been completely dephlogisticated, it would no longer serve to support combustion of any material, nor could phlogisticated air support life, for the role of air in respiration was to remove the phlogiston from the body. Thus, phlogiston was described in a way that was basically the opposite of the role of oxygen in combustion. And of course, this was refuted by Antoine Laurent Lavoisier. I practiced this before the show, in the late 18th centuries. But here's an interesting metaphor. Basically, what that's saying, it's a similar kind of thing as if we said, you know, that light bulbs, the flashlights, actually suck dark.
Right.
And they die when the batteries are full of dark, right? As opposed to the other way around.
Right. That's cool.
It's kind of an interesting, you know, inverse thing. And
you're interesting, not really a geek bit in the sense that you can experience and love that whole story via the radio. So I guess I lied earlier. I'm sorry.
Well, anyway, I'll post.
But if you go to the website, you can hear it again and again.
You can read it even.
Only if you go to the website can you find the Wikipedia link.
That's right. There'd be no other way to do that.
Well, who knows how to spell phlogiston?
Right.
Good point. Geekspeak.org. Lindsay, you got a geek bit.
Sure. The Let's Pizza vending machine. Have you heard of this?
I have now, and my life is complete.
So it's a hit in Europe. It's a vending machine that you can pay about $6 and get an 11-inch pizza made. And the robots knead the dough, add the toppings, and they use an infrared to cook it. And bam, you have pizza for $6.
Do you get to watch? Do you get to watch it?
It looks like there's a little window, but I don't know if you're actually watching the cooking or just where it comes out. It doesn't look like you can actually watch it through a big glass window.
It's actually an E-Ink video display.
Pizza vending machine. Yes. Hot, freshly made pizza vending machine.
Yeah.
Now, we don't have jetpacks, but I think we might be in the future. That's yeah. really close.
You know, if it's actually as much fun as the publicity photo makes it look like, yeah. all these people with their hands in the air, whoa, pizza! Yeah,
it's some seriously good marketing.
Fantastic. Fantastic. I'll have to tell my friend that does pizza blogging. All right, well, don't laugh at that. That's
really?
Awesome. Oh, yeah, I'll put his site up, too. It's a Tumblr blog about pizza.
Today
oh,
my God, you're serious. Anchovies oh, yeah. and... onions.
Oh, man, you have no idea. It's so awesome. Let's go ahead and go on to some more geek news. And I've lost track, but I think it's Ben's turn to tell us about...
I'm not going to tell you about Google Glasses because I've got something that's more important, maybe, mm-hmm. which is deadly asteroids. I want to talk about that. So let's not bring up Armageddon because every single time... I'll just pause for a moment.
No, that's background noise going.
Okay, got it. We need some timpanis or whatever. Anyway, so the... I can't do this story.
Okay, go ahead. Miles out. Go.
Okay, so the B612 Foundation is going to be launching a mission in 2017-ish, and it's going to attempt to discover and catalog statistically 90% of the asteroids that are larger than the 140 meters in Earth's region of the solar system. So the reason this is important is because if an asteroid were to happen to, I don't know, hit Earth, and it was larger than 140 meters, then that would be really, really catastrophic, right? In fact, if there was one that was perhaps even just 50 meters across, that's smaller than a football field by a good amount, that can explode with the yield of millions of tons of TNT. So that's in the same range as of the biggest nuclear weapons we've ever detonated on Earth. So this is not 50 meters, but it's looking for the ones that are larger than 140 meters. They'll find some that are smaller than that and everything. But of course, the more you look for small asteroids, the more difficult it is and the fewer of them you can find. It does make me happy that we're launching this mission, though, and that we're also launching another mission, NASA is, called the NEOCAM, the Near Earth Object Camera, which is going to do a very similar kind of thing in different ways. But, you know, they're kind of going to be working not against each other, but very much together to find as many of these near Earth objects as we can. So that way, if there is one that's hurtling towards Earth, you know, like we found Apophis and it turns out that one's going to be relatively innocuous, but it was close. You know, if we find one that it looks like it's going to hit Earth, we can go ahead and figure out a way to handle it.
Hopefully.
Just to point out with the Sentinel mission, the one he's talking about, mm-hmm. the orbit of the satellite will be within Earth's orbit, so closer to Venus.
Yeah, that's going to be in Venus's orbit.
Right, and then
I think
the point behind that also is to see those objects that are coming from the direction of the sun from our point of view.
Right.
And so that we were able to, because right now we're completely blind in that direction with regard to objects that could kill us.
All year long blind in that direction.
Yeah.
So basically this will be going, if it's closer than the Earth, then it's going to not be it's going to change its distance from us. Right? It'll get close and it'll get farther away.
With the Sentinel or?
The Sentinel.
It's almost exactly Venus's orbit.
Okay, so yeah, it will be a different. I mean, it will pass it.
Oh! I see what you're saying.
It'll pass us. Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Anyway, since we're talking about space news, real quick, I'll just mention that. Did you see that the New Star probe visualized a black hole?
No.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's really awesome. Yeah. So, the do you know about the New Star probe, Ben?
No, I don't actually.
So, New Star probe is one of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory's devices in orbit, and it's a nuclear spectroscopic telescope array, and it's done an X-ray image of a black hole active. And now, black holes are not completely dark because of Hawking's radiation; they actually spew out X-rays, and so we are able to visualize this in the image. I should have made it a geek bit. Because there's an image of it, which is really cool.
I'm sorry, I can't help it. They would be emitting the Hawking radiation if they weren't consuming.
No, if they
if they're consuming, they're emitting Hawking radiation, and they have a jet of material that's being spun out at
The different axis. Right. Because as what you're saying is as stuff gets into the black hole's power, if you will, it gets ripped apart, and some of that energy goes out. Is that why?
You have a lot of stuff going around
orbiting high velocity. Yeah,
you have a lot of energy going into it as friction comes into play, and some of that material goes into the black hole, and some of it is shot back out again. But it's according to the spin of the black hole, so you end up with jets along the axis,
or what
appear to be jets.
Right. All right. Cool.
That's cool stuff.
I just had to.
That's great.
I have to offer a quick observation. Lyle, you covered a news story a little bit earlier, and you pulled it up on your iPad while you're doing the show on your computer. And then this last one, you pulled it up on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, I've got three devices in front of me, all made by Apple. Fanboy.
It's amazing.
So the reason is that I'm using Instapaper. Do you know what Instapaper is?
Yeah.
Right.
I love Instapaper.
So it's actually one of the suggestions I have. Instapaper is really cool. It is a paid app, I think, on iPhone and iPad. But basically, bookmark plugin to your browsers. And when you're on a page that you like on any of your devices, you say, bookmark this. It actually grabs the actual text, reformats it with a cleaner, easier to read structure, if you will, and then syncs it to your account. Then your apps that you have are actually always pulling your account whenever it has data, so those files are there on your machine even if you don't have network. And so I had Instagrammed one article, and therefore I was open the iPad and I could see it easier because the iPad's larger. That was the last time I mentioned, I don't know what I was talking about, but I was talking about something. And the 16 years to deploy a network for Army people, right? So I did that one. The other story was in Google Reader, and I didn't have it on my iPad easily.
Yeah.
And so I opened my iPhone. That's where I was reading it this morning.
Yeah, I was wondering about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I try to do a lot more syncing with my devices so they're always the same on all three of them. So I have Safari being the same. If I had a bookmark on one, it gets updated to all of them.
Instapaper is also great if you have a Kindle. Because I was talking about that a little while ago. It'll actually export a .mobi file or something like that.
The Kindle format,
and you can download it directly onto your Kindle and read all of those things offline on your Kindle on an airplane or whatever.
It is amazing how many cool, great little apps there are out there and services that are, you know, next to nothing and simplify your life. I have continually thought, I'm not using anything unless it's free. That's how my upbringing was, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now I go, wow, I can spend $2 on something that makes my life a lot easier. So now I actually buy software. I actually buy a lot of software.
Yeah, $2 is like a third of a burrito. That's not bad, right?
You and your burrito measures. We had a whole series about that a couple weeks ago. Let's not go into it again. Miles, it's your turn for a Geek News, I believe, right?
Yep. Apple has changed some of their verbiage on their site from saying that we are immune to Windows viruses, which actually was a safe statement because Windows-based viruses couldn't affect the Mac. But they were saying it was completely immune. Now they're just softening that message to say it's built to be safe.
But which is built to be safe?
The Mac.
The whole operating system.
Yeah, is built to be safe rather than completely immune.
Wait, Apple had been saying that it had been immune?
Yeah.
That's just lies.
Well,
dirty lies.
No, because they were saying completely immune to Windows viruses.
So they
were very careful to say Windows viruses.
I'm completely immune to viruses.
And this is just in time for a new OS X backdoor that has been making the rounds.
I see.
And
Can you describe what a backdoor is in with regards to viruses and such?
Well, it's not really a virus, but a backdoor is some piece of software that installs onto your system and allows someone else to gain access to see what keystrokes you're writing, what you may be showing on the screen, to be able to issue commands to that computer.
And the metaphor is if you have a house and you don't know that there's a back door and you're living in your house all pleasant and all of a sudden people walk in from the back, you're like, what?
Or someone sneaking in the back door and taking stuff or putting stuff back in that you don't know about.
So OS X has a vulnerability like that? Is it been patched?
Well, it doesn't have a vulnerability per se. It's just a Trojan horse actually that's making the rounds. And this is an area that we've talked about with Windows for many years, but now we have to say to Mac users, don't click on emails that have an attachment that you're not expecting. Because it is an attachment, and it expects that you're going to click on that attachment, possibly save it, and then execute it.
And then enter in your admin password, because you'd have to do that too. Uh-huh. Yeah, you basically have to install this application. Now, we talked about Trojans before in OS X environment, about, I don't know, a year ago or so. One of the people were seeing on BitTorrent, when people were getting software without paying for it on BitTorrent, like the Adobe suite and stuff, these Trojans were in the package, right? So somebody basically, some hacker decided, hey, I'm going to install Trojans on OS X users. So they got Adobe's suite. They added the Trojan into the package. They put it up on BitTorrent. People would download it to get free Photoshop. And then they'd be infected by a backdoor Trojan that then allowed the person to use the machine just like any compromised machine. So at this point, we're saying you've got to be really careful. When you're getting a prompt from your computer to enter a password, please, please, please make sure that you intended to do something like completely modify your machine. Because that's what it can do at that point, especially if it's sent to you through email.
Yeah, and it will. It means your machine will be controlled by someone in China, because that's where the command control IP address comes from.
Now, Russia, too. There's Russian mafia does it, too.
Just to do a quick clarification, you would not necessarily have to input your password, because that would be necessary if you were putting the file someplace that you could...
On the admin account.
But if you wanted to, say... read someone's local account where they had some tax data, or...
You don't need the permission for the user account, you mean? And
right.
You can still run process space and everything in there.
Right.
In fact, you don't even need to get admin rights on the machine.
You can also set up facilities sometimes for programs to auto-run for that particular user.
Right. And you could potentially put in a keylogger auto-running app as the user account, and next time they have to put their password in, you can look at it. And then you get their admin account. So there's ways of doing it. So don't open attachments in email unless you're absolutely positively sure you want that attachment to control your computer.
So I want this So for the audience out there, I want a Pavlovian response where you see an attachment to an email and I want you to think of this.
You start salivating.
So you see the attachment. And you go like, whoa, wait a second.
Dude, you should make that plugin for mail.
Email attachment. So you have to think twice
Miles.
About it.
Seriously, write a little script you can install. Whenever you open an email message in mail that actually has an attachment that's not like a JPEG or a PDF or something regular, it should just do that sound. That'd be fantastic. I'd put it on all my friends' computers without their knowledge.
And then email that script to all
to everybody.
Your friends, right?
It's the first time it pops up and says, this would have been very dangerous, and then it adds that sound every time.
Yeah.
I'll help you now.
You should have told me that in private so that I could have had the idea to myself before we told everyone
in the world. You know, I've got a new
theory.
Just
people who listen to us, so it's just the five people, but still. It's just
there's seven people listening to us. My mom's listening today. I can't figure my train of thought now. Oh, but
speaking of ideas.
Speaking of ideas. Yeah. You know my mother. Oh, no, now I'm in trouble. Okay. My mother was listening. So I just launched another Tumblr blog for myself, because what happened is my task management system, I use this thing called OmniFocus for all my tasks, right? So everything that I need to do in my life, I add to that. Like call my mother, right? It's in there and I don't do it enough. But any case, one of the things that keeps on getting added and never removed is smart, interesting idea, right? I label my thing idea for website, right? So it would be things like that, right? I would add that to my OmniFocus management thing and it would stay there for 2 years as I don't do it. So now what I've decided to do, anytime I think of an idea or somebody else thinks of an idea and doesn't do anything with it that I was kind of involved with, maybe. I'll go ahead and add it to this Tumblr thing called Stupid Ideas or Useless Ideas or Free Ideas. I can't remember what I named it. Anyway, I'll link it on geekspeak.org so that I'm constantly taking those ideas and just getting them off my plate. You know, I don't have to deal with it anymore. It's out there. People can think of it. And, of course, a lot of people think that, I mean, people that come to me because they do Geeks, they know I do Geekspeak, they come to me and go, I've got this amazing idea. Will you sign this NDA so I can share it with you? And I say, well, do you have a company that's running now? Do you have it funded and all that? No. Well, then I'm not interested in signing an NDA. I'd only sign an NDA if you're actually actively doing something, because an idea, a really, really good, amazing idea without any action is worth about 25 cents. That's the top price for a really good idea. And that's kind of, I think we all agree with this idea, right?
Having ideas is easy. Implementing those ideas is
so you're giving away quarters.
I'm giving away quarters to anybody
on your Tumblr.
That's right.
Free quarters.
And the only thing that I request, if you do use the idea, or if you know the idea has already been implemented, which of course 99% of the time it's going to already be done, is just tell me that it was. Because what I really want is that idea to exist. I don't want to actually build that idea or make that idea or even make any money on it. I just want to know it exists. So
I would love to build the things. I wish I had more time in the day.
You decide to have children.
Yeah,
I think it was a good choice. Don't get me wrong. Ben, it's your turn.
It is. Okay. So Facebook, of course we have to mention Facebook, has changed. Sorry, let me rephrase. Everyone is decrying how horrible it is that Facebook has changed everyone's email to, let's say, Ben at Facebook.com or Lindsay at Facebook.com or whatever your username
is. You guys
is
don't
Facebook.
Have those usernames.
That's true. you might have Lyle at Facebook.
I have Lyle.Troxel, unfortunately.
Oh, man. In any case, what actually happened is Facebook decided, you know what, we're going to give everyone an at Facebook email account. They did that a long while ago. They started sending creating those. What they actually did most recently, this is just, I think, last Tuesday or Monday or something, is they started rolling out these changes that changed the visible email address on your Facebook account to be your at Facebook email address. So I had my normal email address on my Facebook, right? Because I want people, if they want to get a hold of me, I want them to go through that email address and be able to get a hold of me. And I don't check Facebook all the time.
Right.
So what they've actually done is they went and changed my email address on my profile without my knowledge to whatever
profile.
It is, benjaffe@facebook.com, I think it is, or something like that. And the only reason that I knew about this is because I happened to read the story, which I'm now covering on GeekSpeak, right? So now
we all know.
Exactly. So if you want your email address to be on Facebook and you don't want to use the at Facebook email address, go ahead and go change that. And you have to go onto your Facebook account and go into your account settings and do that and everything. The thing that bothers me about it, they didn't just add the at Facebook account. They actually removed my normal email address. Mm-hmm. They replaced my email address with @facebook.com email. The frustrating thing about it is not as much that they did it. They're a company, right? They're going to do stuff like that, especially them being Facebook. They have a track record doing weird things like this. It's that most people won't go and change their email back to what they want it to be. And that's the real issue I have with Facebook's privacy changing or
right.
All of their
they make changes, they don't notify anybody, and then it does something you don't actually want.
Yeah, and then
normally we're upset about that when it's a privacy and security concern, but this is kind of a representing you differently.
And then
trapping
after that,
people into being in Facebook.
After that, like 8% or maybe 20% of the savvy population goes and changes whatever to be back the way they want it, but of course 80% doesn't. Or they say, oh, I should do that, and they never get around to doing that. So that's what bothers me about this. So if you care, Facebook changed your email address, probably. So go and change it back if you want to.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yay, Facebook.
Miles.
I'm going to switch gears and talk a little bit about education and current trends in such, and to call out some folks that are doing stuff that I don't like, so therefore it must be bad. So the Texas GOP has put up a statement saying that, quote, we oppose the teaching of higher order thinking skills, critical thinking skills, and similar programs.
Wait. GOP in Texas put up a statement that says this. Say this again, because this is, I don't believe this is a public figure saying this. So I need to be really clear what you said.
Oh, I'm going to put a link to the actual
the quote.
PDF.
Okay, so go ahead and read that statement again, that quote.
We oppose the teaching of higher order thinking skills, critical thinking skills, and similar programs that are simply a relabeling of outcome-based education, which focus on behavior modification and have the purpose of challenging the student's fixed beliefs and undermining parental authority.
Wow. Is this for elementary school statement, just general education statement all the way through college?
This is public school education.
Public school education. So up to high school, we don't want you to be a free thinker. I think we have a new tagline for GeekSpeak. I think that's perfect.
And this comes right alongside Louisiana, not to be outdone.
Oh, of course.
Although this is not an official statement by the GOP or any political party of Louisiana. This is a particular set of fundamentalist schools in Louisiana. They plan on teaching children that the Loch Ness Monster is real.
Why?
Because.
Because their parents believe it?
No, they want to disprove Darwin's theory of evolution.
That's the best way to do that.
Right. Wait.
So in what's known as the Accelerated Christian Education textbook, Biology 1099, are dinosaurs alive today? Scientists are becoming more convinced of their existence. Have you heard of the Loch Ness Monster in Scotland? Nessie, for short, has been recorded on sonar from a small submarine described by eyewitnesses and photographed by others. Nessie appears to be a plesiosaur. Yeah.
Is it too early to start drinking?
Another claim is that a Japanese whaling boat caught a dinosaur once.
Of course. Why wouldn't they?
Okay.
And as this painting has here, it's unclear if the movie Godzilla was an inspiration for this lesson.
So I have a question. Were Nessie actually real? How would that say anything at all about
evolution? They got
evolution?
You, Ben. They got you. You went the wrong direction. You're supposed to say, that's absolutely stupid.
No,
but instead,
no.
You went to an intellectual debate on whether Nessie exists, and they won.
Yeah. A good friend of mine says it's irrational to try to rationalize with irrational people.
Perfect.
So, and you can't logically convince...
You can't logically defeat
an unarmed person.
A person that has their beliefs in belief, right? Or their ideas in belief. There's a great...
You can't reason someone's...
You can't reason someone
out of a position they didn't reason themselves into in the first place. There we go.
You know, if we edit the show's audio, we would sound amazing.
Wait, we're not going to edit the audio?
Nope. Not enough time. I got kids too. Lindsay, what's up?
Oh, I was just going to talk more about Project Glass because I think this is interesting.
Okay, since Ben didn't do it. Yes.
I know. Well, I shirked my responsibility.
We talked about it earlier and I was going to talk about it, but then I was trying to put it back off on him. Sorry, Ben.
Thanks.
Well, I haven't watched the video and I'm really excited about the video and Ben has seen it. So
I have seen the video. I saw it this morning.
Oh, please tell me what it is. I have no idea what you're
talking. So wait, first of all, what's Project Glass?
Project Glass is part of the Google X Lab. It's a research and development program that helps develop an augmented reality head-mounted display. There's a TLA for that. HMD.
You're going to have to say what a TLA is.
Head-mounted display.
No, I mean, what...
Oh, TLA. Why,
yeah.
Three-letter acronym.
That's right.
Oh, gosh.
I know.
Wow. So glasses you put over your eyes and then you can see things that other people don't see?
Right. You know, so you can... I'll have an excuse for being crazy when I walk around and talk to
you. How small is this headset? Is this like a giant helmet or is this like a pair of glasses? How big is it?
You know, it's not a new idea, but they're making it look sleek. It actually looks like a pair of glasses.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to give you the same functionality that you have with your smartphone now. And I don't know if that's because it incorporates with your smartphone and that's why it's so small, or if it's independent of itself, and maybe Ben will know because he saw the video.
Well, one of the difficult things about Google Glasses is that they've been very, very scant on actual technical details, right? You've seen Sergey, the CEO of Google, I think he is, walking around with these glasses and certain demos and things like that, but they haven't actually gone into actual technical details. And I think part of the reason is that they're not actually 100% there yet, you know? Like, they're getting there, but they're not there yet. If any of you guys actually went and watched the Google Glasses pilot or teaser video or whatever that they came out with when they first announced the project, it is ridiculous. That is 20 years, 30 years in the future. Maybe 15, but it's definitely not happening now.
So
right?
They have a video now with what they're actually doing?
They have a video now with what it will become.
Hmm.
And then they also have a couple of videos of them giving various...
What was that movie, Rocket Man? I mean, it doesn't matter if they're if they have something that it will become. I mean, unless you're talking about it will become when we release it in December. You know, I mean, something exciting like that.
Well, I mean, in Star Trek, Wesley walks into the room with this big cartridge and he says, "Oh my God, you can store gigabytes on a single cartridge." That's our future, guys.
Wesley said that?
Wesley said
gigabytes?
That. Gigabytes on a single... This thing is like the size of your head.
We and have it gigabytes looks like, in our fingernails at like, this point.
It looks like an SNES cartridge or something.
Oh, nice.
That's like the the size of
was
your head.
Was it painted special color, though? I got to watch that. Find that episode. I want to watch that episode. But wait a second.
I've been looking for it. I can't find it.
I'm sure you could find it with help with Google. But, Lindsay, since this is your story.
Yeah.
And you want to be able to have just a smartphone chip on your body and then have these glasses. How do these things help you? I mean, how does it operate like a cell phone? I don't get that aspect. Or describe it to me. What does it do?
Well, it's going to have a voice command feature.
Okay.
So, you know, they say Siri-like, which I'm sure there's going to be all kinds of fun patent infringement stuff that comes out with that.
So you'll talk to your glasses.
But you can read your email, you know, do things like I use my phone all the time for email and browsing the web, stuff like that. And so
this is like an overlay heads-up display on your world.
Exactly.
Okay. So you'll still be able to see through the glasses, hopefully.
Yeah, I hope so.
Unless driving. And then it'll add data, and you'll basically focus on that data instead of the world around you, just like you focus on your phone right now. So you can look right at a person, be chatting with them, and be reading your email at the same time.
Yes.
This sounds perfect.
Right.
We can become socialists. I love it.
I got to mention really quickly how they demoed it. They actually did a live Google Hangout with several people up in a blimp, and they skydove out of the blimp onto the Moscone Center in San Francisco during Google I/O, the conference. And then they took those glasses, and then they had bikers do crazy motorbike tricks to the end of the building, rappelled down the side of the building, and then entered the building and went up on stage.
So that's was it a marketing it. Plan? Or
that sounds like a marketing plan. But it was a really cool video to watch, I gotta say.
Yeah, but it has nothing to do with it.
Exactly. Because they're not quite here yet.
Okay, so in the actual research space at UCSC, where I work, right, there are people doing augmented reality stuff all the time. We use iPads and the camera on the iPad to walk around, do whole video game installations, whole art installations, where you're holding an iPad in front of you and looking through it like a view. And on top of that view, which is the scenery around you, there are objects you can interact with. Very cool stuff happening all the time.
Yeah,
we haven't seen it in glasses, but I have seen one of the students has made a display that mirrors your iPhone. You slide your iPhone, and I've got like a minute and 10 seconds. I better stop talking. You know what? It's time to end Geek Speak, unfortunately. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me today was Lindsay Lonnie. Lindsay, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks.
It's been a pleasure. Fun. And you'll be back within the month, right? We're going to actually get you here sooner.
Yes.
Awesome.
It's going to be within the month.
Wonderful. We also have Miles Elam. And Miles, I hope you won't be here at all. No, wait. No, I like you being here too. And thank you, Miles, for being here as well.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
And Ben Jaffe. I love the shirt that you're wearing, Geek Speak shirt.
It is a Geek Speak shirt.
It's a one of a kind. Wait, no, it's not. In fact, I've got some. If you run into me on the street in Santa Cruz and you want a shirt, ask for one.
Do you actually have some?
I do. I have only extra large, though. Geek Speak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used with permission. My name is Lyle Troxell. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at kosp.org. You can learn about everything we talked about up on the website, geekspeak.org.